Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
Welcome to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host today, Joe Tumalo, and I have a wonderful, wonderful guest with me in the studio today, and someone that I've known for quite a while, probably at least a decade. I've always heard the term Renaissance man, but I guess you can apply that to Renaissance woman as well, right?
Good morning.
Good morning, Alex. Alex Roby, welcome. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Joe. So glad.
Yeah, and you have accomplished so much in your life. You are an attorney. Correct me if I don't have any of this accurate. You're an attorney. You're currently director of gift planning at Northwell Hospital.
All correct.
Yeah, good. Doing good so far. And you're very educated. You have a lot of experience. You have both, I like to say, the below the line, all that technical expertise and everything that goes around that, and above the line, all the softer side of the work we do, your sensitivity to donors, focusing on the donor's agenda and what the donor wants to accomplish, all these wonderful things. You are a black belt in karate. How cool is that? And you are a dog lover.
I am.
And probably most importantly, you're a wife and a mother to two boys, yes?
That's right, Noah and Gabriel.
Wonderful. And so what sparked this podcast was reading your books. So you've got two books out, Zen and the Art of Fundraising. And then the next one is Zen and the Art of Fundraising, 8 More Pillars of Success. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I follow in good footsteps. You too have written a book, at least one that I know of.
Well, I've read some, but yes, I've written two as well.
Two, thank you.
Yeah. So, and the book really, there's a lot of fundraising books out there, and they're all great. And I don't mean to diminish the importance of the how-to books, but I don't see a lot of fundraising books that focus more on, again, that above the line, more of listening and being present and focusing on other people's agendas and not letting the pressure, because everybody's under so much pressure, right? Not letting that pressure of having to bring the dollars in affect our ability to be present and to really focus on the donor.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we're a new fundraiser, we're trying to learn as much as we can. And what we think we have to learn is, think back to kindergarten. You know, everyone wanted to know how much reading can you do, or can you add 2 + 2, or but it's the skills like standing in line, raising your hand, listening. Those are skills that kind of carry through. And I think as fundraisers, I started as an attorney, so I started with the technical background, but I realized over the years that what donors really want, the essence of our job is donors, right, Joe?
Yes.
So what donors really want is they want us to listen to them, to really hear what they're saying, to go back and forth with them in a conversation or a dialogue like we're having, and to get to know them and not just to jump into the technical stuff. And so fundraisers who just want to jump into the technical stuff, especially gift planners, I'm asking everyone to consider taking a pause and looking at what's really important to your donors.
And slow it down, right?
Right. Sometimes, and I'm the worst offender of that. I'm a type A person. On and on we go. But sometimes you just have to stop. I have a piece in my book, something I learned from listening to meditation tapes and people who are way wiser than I am, that sometimes you just have to take 3 deep breaths before you do something, and then you'll do it better and you'll do it more focused. And don't we all want to try to do our jobs better?
And I love that. In your first book, first of all, I'm all about simple stuff, and I the older I get, the more experience I get, and hopefully a little wiser, I think it's the simple stuff that's oftentimes more impactful and important than things that are more complicated. And I got that simple exercise from you out of the first book, and I think in the book it said to, in your mind, say to yourself, I am breathing in, I am breathing out. Was that in the book, I Am Breathing In?
That was. And,
yeah.
And the reason why is if you don't say anything, sometimes your mind wanders. And it takes people who meditate great practice to quiet their mind. You know, later on today, after you listen to this podcast, you might want to try to close your eyes, close your mind, and have your body stop. If you need to, set a timer on your watch or your phone for a minute and see how your mind wanders. It's called a monkey mind. And that's what we have to try to pull back on to be more effective. It's like the constant multitask zone. And that's what we have to pull back on. And the reason why you practice it in everyday life is because then when you're sitting in front of a donor or you're on a phone with a donor, you are really focused on what's going on.
So mindfulness, right, being present, mindfulness, and it is a skill set, right? It is something, just like you said, that you can transfer to so many areas of your life.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's beyond fundraising. You know, the book is actually, I wrote it as a fundraiser and for fundraisers, but the tools or what I call pillars that are in the book go far beyond fundraising. They actually make good people in life. They can help in life. Yes.
And it's such a feel-good book. I just feel good when I read it. I like it's an easy read, and you can just, as I do, you can just pull out a chapter once in a while, and it just it gets you back to center and grounded, and it's just, I feel good after I read it. So really blessed that I've come to read your books.
Thank you for those kind words. I heard a couple of my friends who have the book, they took it on a flight because they said it was the perfect book for a flight. You read a little, you nap a little, you read a little more, you get your drink, and then you move on with your day. So if it helps refresh and reset and make us all better as we go forward, then I've done what I intended to do.
Wonderful. And it gets you through the turbulence on the plane.
Exactly. That's a great analogy, Joe.
Right? I start to freak out when it starts to get a little bumpy, and then all these things go through my mind, like, oh, my God. Not that we're going to – I don't know. It's just my biggest fear is that the plane's going to drop, like, 1,000 feet or something. So, I mean, so I started doing that, the three breaths, and just to calm myself down. It's great stuff.
Sometimes, too, so, you just have to get from point A to point B, and you're right. And I think if it relaxes you, if you need it in a moment – it's there to use. The great thing is it's free. It doesn't take any time. You just close your eyes, take your three deep breaths, inhale, exhale, and then move on. And hopefully that will reset and refocus, whether you're on a plane, at the, you know, sitting in traffic, at the grocery store, or ready to make a big ask, a big solicitation of a donor.
And what do you, I have my own answer, but I'd love to hear yours. What do you say to people when they say, I'm too busy to meditate, or I'm too busy to slow down and practice this mindfulness? What's your response when they say I'm too busy?
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of hearing about those experiments in the old days with hamsters that just kept going and going and going. And even if they're generating electricity, let's say their little wheel is hooked up to an electric node and they're making electricity, at some point, if they don't take a break and get off, they're going to collapse and everything's going to stop. So the best thing, it's like saying sleep is a waste of time, right? I could be using those 6, 7, 8 hours to do something, you know, more productive. But the problem is you need sleep, and you also need quiet, and you also need to reset. That's why it's like a fresh feeling when we go in each day to a new day. If you stayed at your workplace and worked 24 hours, you would not be fresh when you go into that new day. It really wouldn't be a new day. So I look at it as a refreshing of yourself and something you need to do for yourself to be more effective in your role.
Yeah, form of meditation for me is going to church, because as soon as I walk in, they have a great worship band that plays more contemporary type music, and they're really good, and they just have a very calming sound. And a couple of weeks ago, I was just really busy and stressed out over the week, and I kept, like, Friday and Saturday, I kept fighting myself, saying, well, I'm too busy to go to church. I had to do this. I had to do that. I can get so much done on Sunday. And I really just fought it. And when I walked in and sat down, it's like decompression. And I said to myself, this is the reason that I say I'm too busy is the very reason why I need to be here. That's the whole point, right, is that we're so busy. Yeah, and that's the very reason I believe that we need to meditate, that we need to practice mindfulness. And then, like you said, it just flows into our work. It's just so transferable into our work. It's cool.
Exactly, and for those that have a place to go, like you said, if we have a place to go, then we should go. People find that in different religious services. Some people find it in nature. Some people find it in a yoga studio. And some people can just be wherever they are and find it. And, you know, the thing is, this is a transferable skill. So if we could take a little bit of that calm, refreshing feeling from wherever we get it, from the church or from wherever it is that we get it, and bring it a couple minutes into our lives each day, I think it will make us better people, and it will make us happier with what we do as well. That's what I tried to bring out in the book, is that these are things that help you. One of the pillars, jumping ahead a little, is positivity.
Yeah, please.
And we can bring more positivity into our life by doing many of these things. If you know you're doing a good job, then you smile at the end of the day. If you can walk out of your workplace, to the extent you actually physically go to a workplace, and you can smile because you made a difference that day, that's what it all comes down to.
So nice. And so you have three P's, I believe. You just mentioned the first P. What are the other two?
I do. So I have, of all the different tools, skills, again, I call them pillars that I could think of, I have my three P's. And so positivity is one of them, and it's certainly an important passion, second one, and patience is the third one. So we have patience, passion, and positivity. And I think those three are very powerful. Let me say something about patience for a moment. I would dare to say that if there were a golden rule of fundraising, it would really be patience. And patience isn't just, you know, your mind jumps to, this is patience with my donors. Well, yes, some donors will take longer than the time that we think that they should take to complete a gift, but it's beyond that. This is patience with yourself for learning and for mistakes. This is patience with your colleagues, with your supervisors, with people that you have to rely on to get you something so you can do your role. This is overall patience, and that's why I believe patience is a really important pillar, especially in fundraising.
And how do you respond when someone says, well, I'm patient, but my boss is impatient, and I feel like they're pressuring me to close these gifts because we have our timeline? And I see it more in major gifts working with my clients. They're just under so much pressure to bring in the cash in a certain time period, and obviously nobody wants to make a donor feel pressured into doing something. But I mean, I can say, well, yeah, sure, Alex, that sounds great. Of course, I'm patient, but my boss isn't patient.
Right. So first you need to take your three deep breaths when your boss says, you know, what's going on with this? Let's say you had a big discussion with your boss yesterday, and today you come in and you have a couple things you want to do. And that important thing is, of course, at top of mind, at the top of your list. And before you can even do anything, your boss walks into your room and says, so what's going on with that? What have you done? You know, did you do anything right away? Yeah, those are difficult situations to navigate. This is called real life and real fundraising. And charities are there and they need their money to fulfill their mission. And that's what we sign on to do as fundraisers. So, you know, I find the best thing is to take my own deep breaths, even if in that particular moment they have to be silent and quick, and look at my boss and say, I'm on it right now. I'm on it, and I'm gonna retain that pillar of positivity, think positive, and reach out to the donor. You know, it's interesting, though, because there also comes a time where impatience is just, sometimes they just want action. Of course, they want results, but they want action. If we've done everything we can do to bring in a gift, patience is not the issue anymore. Then it's a matter of closing the gift or you know, being able to take the next step. So patience is in there, but it's more than patience. They're under pressure, which I don't have as a P. That's the bad P. The pressure that makes you go outside the pillars and do things when your intuition, when your mind tells you you shouldn't. So I just try to take a deep breath at that moment, look at my boss and say, I'm on it. Adopt a positive mind frame, do whatever the step is that needs to be taken, and then see what happens.
Yeah, I always suggest that people not only track the results, but track the behavior to do exactly what you just said. So the only thing I can ultimately control is my behavior, right?
Right.
And I can't really control the results all the time. I can't control if donors are going to want to connect, if they're going to be open to the conversation, if they're open to making a gift on our timeline. But I can control my behavior, and that's why I like to track the behavior, to show people, like you said, look, here's the behavior. I made X amount of calls this week, X amount of meaningful conversations, And is that enough? And maybe I need to bump it up, right? So we manage what we measure, or measure what we manage. So
exactly. And the measurement in the end, of course, everyone wants to know how much did I bring in, or your boss wants to know how much did you raise and how does that compare to the goal of what we thought that you could or should do this year. But in the end, you want to show that you took every step to bring in that goal that you could. And, you know, we can always try to make one more call or take one more step or do one more thing. And so we just always want to make sure that pressure that your boss feels, we should almost always feel it inside ourselves, not as pressure, but as inspiration to do our jobs. And it all ties back into the mission.
And one thing I really like in the book is the stories you tell and apply, and they're just so heartwarming. Do you have a couple your favorite ones that you want to share, some stories?
Sure. So I have one that's a little more meaningful, and then one that's a little bit funny, but both kind of show the roles of fundraisers. If I start with one, when I have the opportunity to visit with other fundraisers and gift planners around the country, when I speak at a place or visit a place, I always like to pose a question to them. And I have posed this question a number of times, which is, what is your most meaningful gift? And that's a question that normally people have to pause. They might not realize they're taking their three deep breaths and pausing, but normally they pause, normally they smile, and then they give an answer of a most meaningful gift. And you've been in fundraising a long time, Joe. You know, what is a major gift? The definition has crept upward with alarming speed, and it always depends on the organization that you're at and your average gift. But, you know, a major gift, probably at some places it's 10, probably it's 25, maybe it has six figures, maybe it's 100,000. I've not one single time asked anyone, and I'm talking about 1,000 people here, I've never asked what is your most meaningful gift. The answer was never their highest gift that they brought in. It was always something else that made the gift meaningful.
Interesting.
It's almost like meaningful is in the eye of the beholder. I think it was a gift that was meaningful to the donor, and that meaningfulness transferred over to the fundraiser and really made an impression on them. And again, it in no case did it have to do with the big size of the gift. It was not the same. You know, what's the biggest gift you raised is a great interview question. You should have an answer for that one. But what is the most meaningful gift you ever raised? You're probably going to have all of the pillars in your mind from listening and being patient and being positive and listening for the passion, those three P's, when you give the response back to that question. So I challenge all the listeners to think about what their most meaningful gift is.
And where do you go in the conversation when the donor, after the donor tells you their most meaningful conversation?
So, you know,
most meaningful gift, excuse me.
Yeah, so normally this is a question that I pose to fundraisers, but it's an interesting question to pose to donors because their most meaningful gift, too, might not be the highest gift that they ever made to an organization. I mean, wouldn't we all love if they said their most meaningful gift was their, you know, nine-figure gift to our organization? We'd all love that answer, and, hey, nothing stops us from going for it with the right donor in the right circumstances. But, you know, the meaningfulness doesn't always have, very seldom has anything to do with size and has to do with the underlying use of the money toward the charity's mission.
Any other favorite stories?
So I have a one that usually makes people giggle, and I can't believe that I might be the only person who was ever in this circumstance, and I call it the letter. This story evidences the pillar of a sense of humor. I think a sense of humor is something very important to have in life, as well as in fundraising, as well as in parenting, as well as even in sometimes, you know, getting on the road and driving and in a lot of things that you do. And so, I was asked to write a letter, a thank you note to send out to donors who made a nice level gift at one of my organizations. And I worked on the letter and I prepared it for someone and they signed it and they sent it out. A lot of us probably prepare letters. We know the donors, but someone higher signs the letter to send it out to the donor. That's a very common strategy in organizations, and it is in mine. And so I sent the letter, or the person above me who signed it sent the letter. And a couple days went by, and I I got a call from the donor, and the donor said, oh, I got this lovely letter. And I said, well, you know, you deserve it, and we just want to repeat our thanks. And the donor said, I need help because I want to draft a reply. And so then I proceeded to help the donor draft a reply to the letter that I basically wrote so the donor could send the letter back to the person who signed the letter that I wrote. So I call it the letter pair. And, you know, you just have to sit back sometimes and laugh. It beats the alternative, which is crying or gnashing your teeth. And just sit back and laugh. You know, wasn't that sort of an example of the true circle of how things go? You get a gift, you say thank you, you repeat it again as many times as you can to the donor, and then the donor reaches back out to you. It's like the circle of giving. I think it's a perfect example of that.
And you had such a relationship, trusting and bonding relationship with the donor that they wanted your help on that. That speaks volumes.
Right, and it was a genuine request from a donor. This letter was so lovely. I feel like I need to respond to the letter. So it also, you know, shows you the variety of skills that fundraisers have. You know, especially gift planners, you might learn all the technical stuff, and that's fine. But if all it ever is in your head, and you can't get it out of your head to make it understandable to the person sitting in front of you, then it's pretty well useless. I love to quote Yoda. I have a book on things that, you know, it's called Be More Yoda. And one of Yoda's principles is share the knowledge you've gained. And Yoda is known to have said, pass on what you have learned. What's the good of being a master if no one benefits? So sometimes we just have to pass back along our skill set, find a way to explain something so it's understandable. I spoke a couple days ago for one of our development boards, and you know, I admitted to some of the board members there that it has been the case that donors will set up a gift. I believe I did a good job explaining it, good enough that they decided to do it. And then a couple months later, they might call back and say, you know, I really need you to kind of explain how this works to me again. And so I take that personally, not as any criticism from the donor, but I take that to heart and think, wow, I didn't do a good enough job the first time to explain that. So my donor really understood. So now I have a second chance to explain it again.
Great. I like it. So I always like to, I love the rule of threes, the power of threes, and I always like to ask my guests that if there are the three takeaways that if nothing else that people would get out of this podcast. Is there anything you want to talk about before we go to the three takeaways?
No, I just think that, you know, every fundraiser, I guess the one thing I would add, Joe, is that every fundraiser needs to find their style. And no two fundraisers are going to be in the exact same position at any time. If they're at different organizations, if they report to different supervisors, if they have a different group of donors who they work with. But some of the skill sets are transferable. Now, how you choose to use them and apply them, all I can say is that if you can hone the skills of being a good person, the three P's that I mentioned, then the output is going to be that much better. That's the only thought I would add before we get into your takeaways.
Yeah, are you familiar with Asking Matters, Brian Saber? Is that something you've seen? Yeah, and talk about, right, Brian and Andrea Kilstedt, who developed it originally, but Brian talks about figuring out your style and that not everybody, you don't have to be extroverted to be a great fundraiser, right? And
right.
I got so much out of that. Well, I think I'm pretty fairly self-aware, and so it wasn't a surprise to me to learn my style, but it was more, my revelation was to celebrate, leverage, and appreciate the differences in other people. So if I have, and I do, business partners, who are people I work with, who are very different than me, rather than, I used to get impatient and say, come on, hurry up, why are you not more like me? And then I realized, That's what makes it work. That's what, you know, especially if we're working with clients, if one person's more analytic and I'm definitely more intuitive, I need that analytic person to slow me down and say, dude, did you double check this before you send this out? Or did you really think about this before you pick up the phone and call the donor? So I think, yeah, there's two sides of it. It's understanding your own style, right? And how to leverage what you have. And then appreciating different styles. And of course, that translates to marriage and everything else, other relationships.
Absolutely. It's part of good teamwork. When, if you're ever in the fortunate position to be able to hire anyone, or you're given the opportunity to interview someone who will be a colleague, you know, your gut feeling, your comfort zone, right, is to get people just like you. And I had a chance at some previous point to hire a couple people, and it would have been very easy for me to pick people just like me. But in a previous job, there were two of us, like you described, you know, one person more analytical and one more, a little bit more feisty, for lack of a better word, and driven. And, you know, the two of us worked well together, so well that when we realized that we had a set of places we needed to be and a set of donors we needed to ask, we literally thought about who would be the best one of us to broach those donors. And we shuffled things around a little bit to make that work. So there's always a way, you know, we all want to think, oh, well, I'm the best person to solicit this donor, to get the highest gift, and to do it the fastest. It's not a competition. It's about the gift, right? And so it's what's going to get the gift from a donor. If you have the presence of mind to see that you are not the right person to try to get a new client, to try to ask a donor for a gift, that's a laudable skill to realize you have that and to find the right person who you believe is and to try it.
Beautifully said. So three takeaways. You may have more, but can you give us kind of three big takeaways from this conversation from the book?
Sure. So, wow, limit it down to three. I think earlier in our conversation, Joe, I think I mentioned listening. And listening isn't just having the radio on in the background and letting it drone on. Listening isn't just hearing your boss tell you something for the third or fourth time. If you really have to hear something the third or fourth time, then you really weren't listening in the true sense of the word, meaning you're paying attention without an agenda to this moment. It's part of being in the moment, but it's really focusing on listening. When the phone rings and a prospective donor is on the other end, your number one thing you have to do at that moment, everything else needs to quiet. The number one thing you have to do is listen. So that's the key to success. It's also been termed the most precious gift we can give anyone is the gift of listening. Someone calls you at your organization and they aren't happy. That never happens, right, Joe? Someone calls
not in our organization, never.
No. You know, something went wrong. Okay, first of all, it's highly unlikely that it was your fault in most of the cases. What they want is to be heard. They want you to listen. So listen is a really important skill.
I'm listening, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I would say probably a second takeaway or second most important skill, although we didn't use the word earlier, is to be curious. A fundraiser should look forward to the next call, to the next visit. Why? Well, that's a really good question to ask. Why? Because we're interested in finding out what is this donor going to do? What drives them to do what they're going to do? And are we going to have a relationship at the other end of this gift? Or is it just sort of a transaction that's going to take place and the person's going to come and go? So asking why is really important. Not necessarily in the way that people do to ask, why are you asking me to do this? Although I think that's a perfectly legitimate question and does deserve a reasonable response, but it's also, why are you doing this now? If a donor's been your donor for 10 years and you haven't asked the question why in a couple of years, then ask it. Pause the conversation and at an appropriate point, say to the donor, you know, I know we talked about this early on when you first started giving. Why are you still inspired to give today? Or why do you think other people would be inspired to give for similar reasons? So I think being curious, asking why, is a really important thing as well.
There's a great, maybe you've seen it, TED Talk on YouTube, Simon Sinek, Start With Why.
Ah, no, that's a good one. I'll have to jot that
down. Yeah. And there's an edited version. It's a 5-minute version. I actually use it in my presentations, in my training with clients, every client. Start With Why, Simon Sinek, and that's S-I-N-E-K. And yeah, it's simple. And I always tell people that are new to Planned Giving, if you knew nothing about Planned Giving, and I'm not saying, just a little disclaimer, I'm not saying don't understand the gift vehicles, but as an exaggeration, if you knew nothing about Planned Giving, but you were really good at all this stuff we're talking about, and you just went out with the donors and said, thank you, and why, and listened and asked great questions. I like to say being successful in planned giving is not about having all the answers, because very few people do, but it's about having all the questions. And can I, as a fundraiser, ask better questions than anybody else? Not that I'm better, but I work on it, and I work on my questions, and how can I build trust faster? I still do some direct donor work for a wonderful organization not that far from you, Salesian Missions in New Rochelle, New York. Mm-hmm. And all my work is over the phone. I basically, if you boil it down, it's cold call. I cold call loyal donors who've never been called before every week. And it's my research lab. I learned so much because most of it's done over the phone. It's hard to get visits with these folks because they've been trained to do everything through the mail. I'm very loyal and very generous. I mean, we have donors that have lifetime giving of hundreds of thousands of dollars just all through the mail with no relationship with anybody. But it's just that slow it down, right? I learned, how do I not sound like a telemarketer?
Right.
One of the big things I learned is slow down, just like you said. So when because what happens when you get a telemarketer? They're reading their script. You can't get a word in edgewise, right? And you want to be polite, because we do that. I always have empathy for telemarketers. My wife is like, hang up. I'm like, no, I do this for a living. I'll listen to what they're saying, but it's that, slow it down. And it works. It's like pause, the power of the pause, right? Was it Mark Twain that said the most powerful word in the English language is pause? And just slow it down and be present. And it's really interesting to hear the person over the phone just put their guard down, right? Because we all have that guard up when somebody calls and we don't know, we're not expecting the call. And so that being present, being curious, being in the moment, slowing it down. So it's really powerful, especially even over the phone. So when you're calling a donor for a visit, right, just, I think it's a great reminder, slow it down and pause.
Some people actually have things written, little post-it notes or little things on their desk that say, now quiet, explain why you're calling, the rules about soliciting, go ahead and do the solicitation of the donor, utter the words, so we'd like to ask you for a gift of X to fulfill, whatever it is, the mission or whatever it is that they're doing, and then be quiet and let the donor. It's like white space on a page. We all need some white space in our mind. I call it sort of the reset period. We need a period to reset. The other part I didn't mention about asking why, Joe, that comes to me is that we should also pose that question to ourselves. The pillars that I've come up with are things that we need to do to make ourselves better so we can go out in the world and help our charities fulfill our mission. So every once in a while, you should also ask yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I consulting? Why am I a senior director of gift planning? Why am I working at this organization? And you should have a good answer to that question. And it will probably be tied into the mission, but it's probably more than that. So it's not just a question that we toss around to our donors. We ask it with meaning, and we should also ask it of ourselves.
Was that the third takeaway, or do you have another one? We have more than three.
No, I would say if we, and you just mentioned it, Joe, I mean, if we go full circle back to the beginning, it's really focusing on being in the moment. Whatever it is you're doing, they say even when you're, if you go to a meditation area, even when you're eating, focus on eating. If you eat in front of the TV, you're going to eat more. You're not really going to get the most out of what you're watching. You're not going to get the most out of eating. So try to be in the moment. Moments that we have with donors, although we all seek them and want a lot of them, and some of us are visiting with donors often, they really don't happen all that often in the course of a day or a week or a month. So the little bit of time that you're with that person, whether it's your 15 minutes that you're on the phone, as you described, Joe, or whether it's your hour and a half or 2 hours that you're sitting with the donor having lunch somewhere, really try to be in the moment and focus on that person. If you've done it right, by the time you hang up the phone or by the time you're done with that meeting, you're going to be tired, not physically tired, but mentally tired, because you really had your mind turned on the whole time. So I would say the final takeaway is just continue to try to be in the moment in everything you do.
So well said. Well, thank you for doing this work. This writing a book is not easy, and you wrote two of them pretty close to each other, right?
I found
just a couple
it to
months,
be fun. I did, and I'm actually I'm actually working on a third one, Joe.
Wow.
I'm working on a third book that's going to apply the pillars to fundraising situation that many of us have found ourselves in. So this is the application of the pillars of a little bit of Zen in an unzen environment. So I'm going to take the pillars and I'm going to mention about 8 to 10 fundraising situations that I guarantee every listener has been in at some point, and we're going to apply the pillars to see how we can get through and navigate that situation. So that'll be a project that I'm working on that'll probably be finished sometime next year.
Wow. And so the first two, where can people get the book?
So the book, if you go into the internet and just type in Zen and the Art of Fundraising or Zen and Brovey, my last name, they come up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Charity Channel Press is my publisher. You can always go right to that website. So I don't think that they would be that difficult to find. I'm always reachable, Joe, if you want to send my contact information to everyone. And, I welcome feedback on the book, positive criticism. I can always do better. Someone once posed to me, so Alex, are you the embodiment of the pillars? Heck no. I aspire to work on all of these pillars and get to the point where I need to be. And I'll probably never get to the nirvana of Zen and fundraising, but I'm going to keep trying.
Well, as my guitar teacher once said, it's a journey with no destination.
That's right. That's right. Well said.
And Brovey is Brovey.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's been such a pleasure, and I feel good again talking to you, so thank you.
Joe, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure, and hopefully we'll keep in touch. And I hope that your listeners are able to take away anything, whether it's the three takeaways or anything else. You and I are striving to make the world a better place. For our own organizations and for clients that we help, and we just want to spread that word.
Nice. And go get that book, people. Alex, thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks so much, Joe.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.